Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic book sales through Diamond to comic book retailers for September 2009. And as is usually the case for the top 300 comics, Marvel has the lion's share of the overall sales, both by dollars and by units. This time around, they had 46.69% of the total unit sales for the top 300. And 48.57% of the total dollars for those units for the top 300. And, I mean, this is a little under the 50% mark, but still, a huge lead, in this case, by actually only about 8 percentage points above DC, which had 38.03% of the total units for the top 300 and 36.71%. And I credit some of that to Darkest Night starting to come into full swing.
Yeah, I mean, well, given that they had three of the top four books, I mean, really solid showing this month for DC. I mean, Blackest Night number two was number one, and then we had Batman and Robin at number three, and Green Lantern number 45, which is, of course, a Blackest Night tie-in, at number four. So the Marvel book that snuck into the top four there was Captain America Reborn number two. But a very, very nice showing for DC. It's been a long time since they dominated the top five, by my recollection.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that even when DC has a strong month, Marvel usually has a fairly strong month too. And going back to the beginning of the pre-order era, which was February 2003, DC's only had the bigger percentage of the overall sales for the top 300, like, four times. And, you know, there have been a couple of times where DC's done fairly well on the top 10 or whatever, but yeah, having four or three of the top four books, you know, is really good. And I think once we start seeing the Blackest Night crossovers really starting to kick into high gear, I think we're going to see some really good months for DC. And deservedly so, because so far everything I'm reading about, you know, tying into Blackest Night, I'm really enjoying. You know, so I think this is a good thing for DC. It's going to be interesting to see how much some of these crossovers bump some of the titles, how those titles do afterwards, and kind of, you know, almost as importantly, in the long term, what's DC going to follow Blackest Night with? You know, is this just going to be good for, you know, the 7-8 months it's running, or, you know, is this something where we're going to start to see DC have a string of successes like Marvel was having for quite a while?
Now, you know, Marvel's already talking about the next piece that's coming after Dark Reign, which is apparently The Siege, which is in the new solicits for December. So we're seeing the rumblings of that now. So they've already got their next sort of event, which, you know, they're not – it's kind of an interesting difference on how they've evolved the event, where it doesn't have that core – miniseries that it's revolving around, and it's sort of a theme that's running through the books with various minis. It has the various satellite miniseries and one-shots and stuff, but not that core miniseries that
I would put
Civil War had and Secret Invasion had and Blackest Night and Final Crisis and all. You know, they broke the mold a little.
I would kind of say they didn't, in so much as I don't really consider Dark Reign or the Initiative or things like that to be events so much as a branding. And you see fairly different sales, you know, trends because of that. And the big thing is you don't have that core miniseries, like you were saying, to kind of tie it together and give it that spine or that backbone, and more importantly, that high level of sales that brings everything else up. Because if you look at this list on the top 300 for things with Dark Reign, I mean, you can go pretty far down the list and see stuff. A lot of these are just selling kind of mediocre. You've got, let me filter the list real quick to make this a little easier. Part of it is they've got too many Dark Reign titles coming out. The ones we have this month are Sinister Spider-Man, which is the top selling of the bunch, at 27,469 units for that third issue. That's down at rank 80. It's followed by Dark Reign Elektra, which I thought was a better series, and that's the final issue of that, number 5. It only did 23,431 units. Dark Reign Hood, number 4, did 19,891 units. Dark Reign Mr. Negative, which I thought was fairly good, the third issue, which I think is the final one of that, did 17,230 units. And then Dark Reign Zodiac's second issue did 15,943 units. I mean, all of those together make it above 100,000, but only to 103,964 units total for the five series combined. So, I think because we don't have a Dark Reign 1 through 8 or whatever length it would have been, and kind of the buzz and the excitement that could have potentially been generated around that, like a Civil War, like a, you know, Blackest Night, that's why we're seeing such a different sales dynamic. Add to that that this Dark Reign is getting slapped on every title out there, it seems like, in the mainstream Marvel universe, which really kind of oversaturates and dilutes the power of that brand. You know, and if you want to go for one that's kind of not really an event kind of a thing, what I think is kind of interesting is the follow-ons, the Final Crisis Aftermath stuff. Because, I mean, Final Crisis was an event. These aftermaths are just the most kind of crass marketing move, because they've got very little connection. I mean, sure, they star some of the characters that were peripherally involved, or at least legitimately involved to some degree, in Final Crisis, but they're not really moving the story along. Final Crisis Aftermath Run, number 4, 13,723 units. Final Crisis Aftermath Escape, number 4, 12,936 units. Final Crisis Aftermath Dance, number 4, 12,281 units. And Final Crisis Aftermath Inc., number 4, 11,825 units. I mean, these are just low, low sales. And, I mean, even when you combine all of those together, you just barely crack, you know, 50,000. You make it actually to 50,765 units. So by doing these kinds of things, I think they're milking, not milking, they're draining the event, you know, sales potential out of some of potentially future projects. You know, it just comes down to how well branded, how tight the story is, and how, you know, much excitement there is on the reader level.
Well, I'm just, my point I think that I was failing to make here is that Marvel seems to have switched up from the straight line event to the theme.
I got to wonder how much of that was not being able to necessarily be getting those straight line events out on a regular basis, on a timely basis.
You know, however they came to it, they seem to have come to it. And, you know, the fact that they're, like, shotgunning so many series out. I mean, you know, you use the example of DC. Well, I mean, they put, like, the 4 miniseries out, the Final Crisis Aftermath, and that's, like, well, you know, whether how good or not good they are, notwithstanding, I mean, how many total Dark Reign things have come out? You know, aside from the fact that it's very strongly branded on, you know, a number of their core titles, you know, the Avengers titles, Ms. Marvel, and, you know, some of the others. I'm not sure that it's to your point, I think your point's valid that it's not like it's bumping up sales like some of the other events might have with, you know, the core book selling 100 and some odd thousand copies, but, you know, Marvel's still dominating, you know, so someone's interested. You know, it's not driving people away, I guess.
No,
which, but, you know, it's debatable, you know, with 17,000 copies on some of these minis, but those are selling at least.
Well, what I find interesting with the Blackest Night versus Dark Reign is both are coming out with a ton of miniseries. Now, with Blackest Night, you're getting characters like Batman, Superman, and more name characters and teams, Titans, etc. Whereas with the Dark Reign, the characters and stuff they're doing are bottom-rung characters. I mean, Zodiac?
Yeah, well, and maybe there's the difference. I mean, they're taking, I mean, and they're not even taking decent villains that you'd care about. You know, it's like if they did the different people in the Cabal and they did like a Sub-Mariner one and a White Queen one and Magneto and Doctor Doom, you know, those I'm guessing would probably sell a little better than, you know, the Lethal Legion and Zodiac and, you know, these other things that they've got coming out just from name recognition alone.
Well, of all the times not to have a Doctor Doom miniseries coming out, this seems kind of funny.
Yeah.
You know, this seems, well, it would have been the perfect time for one.
And you add to that just historically, and it's the theme of the event, you know, it's like the bad guys take over and all that, but historically, books that headline villains don't sell anywhere near as good as hero-led books, especially popular hero-led books. So DC, I mean, they are looking at the secret sauce there because, you know, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Teen Titans, you know, these are very solid subject matters for their Blackest Night tie-in series.
Well, and again, to me, this goes back to kind of the recipe that Marvel was using with Civil War, you know, because you could have, or well, not so much Civil War, I guess, the Secret Invasion, where you've got the main title to be following, plus you've got the miniseries that ties into the event, that kind of a thing. But Marvel, or not Marvel, DC's really kind of double-dipping because you got the Blackest Night Titans, which, you know, the first issue here did 64,000. 698 units, which, you know, these days for Titans is pretty good. But then they're also double dipping in terms of the Titan series itself is having crossovers into Blackest Night. So it's not like they're even relegating it just to the mini series. So I think this has a lot of potential for DC, and I'm really curious if they have an exit strategy for this in so much as, is there going to be any spin-off out of this that becomes a viable series that really grows the DC universe, that gives them a new title or a couple of new titles for people to latch onto and ride out of this? Because really, aside from Booster Gold, nothing really has stuck from any of the other events they've done in the last couple of years. There's none that I can think of off the top of my head. But even Booster Gold, I'm trying to find that on the list real quick and not seeing it, is not setting the world on fire sales-wise, which is too bad. I'm enjoying that series. There it is. It's down at rank 96 with 22,085 units, again, for Booster Gold. Now, it's interesting that Blackest Night number 2 had a 21% drop, which again, very average kind of second issue drop, whereas Captain America Reborn number 2 in that second slot had a 35.11% drop. I mean, that's 67,767 estimated unit drop from that first issue. Now, it's going to probably have some reorder over time, whatever, but to me, that implies potentially a certain amount of dissatisfaction from some people on that first issue. You know, and we'll see where that goes. I do see the Batman and Robin, you know, number 3, being in that third position is a really good sign and a kind of a consistent show of faith for that series. The 11% drop there, fairly standard for a third issue, but it's still well over 100,000. So it implies that that part of the retooling of the Batman family of titles has been somewhat successful. You know, we'll see where it is in another couple issues and, you know, if it continues to drift down or if it, you know, is able to keep people for a while.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, Green Lantern cracking 100,000 with the Blackest Night crossover, not the least bit surprising, but again, a very good sign.
I'm really hopeful, you know, it's like, and this is always something when you have a variation in circulation due to an event, how much excitement is going to carry through and how likely are people to stick with the book after the event is over? You know, that's a real key point here is, you know, are we going to see the Green Lantern books and DC in general? I mean, they have to keep the quality up, but are people going to flee as soon as the event is over and not even stick around to find out how good it is? You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, and I gotta wonder if the brilliance behind Blackest Night as a concept is that so much of it is about the expanded mythos of what it means to be a Green Lantern in terms of, you know, exploring the Yellow Lantern, the Red Lantern, all the different colors and stuff. But in the core of the Blackest Night story, it's really, again, about the mythos of the Green Lantern core, whereas you can't really say that about most event titles. You know, you can't say that about Civil War. You can't really say that about Secret Invasion. You can't really say that about even in, you know, Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, whatever, because none of those really delved deep into, say, what it meant to be a Kryptonian or what it meant to be an Avenger or an X-Men or whatever to the level right. That this is doing it with Green Lantern. So I gotta think that while other titles may not get that continued bump afterwards, Green Lantern has a really good chance at getting it. Because I do think people are going to come out of this really excited about that corner of the DC universe. Now,
I hope so. I hope so.
You know, I hope they're able to keep the quality up throughout the run of the storyline and, you know, follow it up with some good stuff. You know, because this is, again, a very strong follow-up to the Sinestro Corps War from a year or two back. And has really kind of kicked it up a notch. So. Now, flip side, you look at this fifth-ranked item. We've got Ultimate Comics Avengers number 1, which did 94,884 units and failed to crack 100,000. Now, at one point, not initially with the Ultimate line, but it got to a point a couple of years in where it was consistently, you know, very, very strong sellers both for the Ultimates, for Ultimate Spider-Man, etc. Less so with Ultimate Fantastic Four, Ultimate X-Men, and some of those titles. But for this relaunch, both for Ultimate Comics Avengers and Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, which is down at rank 11, with 85,917 units, strong for both of these, but not overly impressive, knock your socks off, wow, this is a blockbuster start.
Right. Well, you know, realistically, the Ultimate stuff is good stuff, and if they could just manage to put it out on some semblance of a regular basis. I mean, that's what really, you know, in my opinion, the original Ultimate stuff, you know, it was miniseries. It wasn't consistently coming out. There were huge delays between issues and stuff. And there seems to be something to reliability of a title. And we've talked about that before.
Yeah. And you get major delays, you lose the momentum. Now, at rank number 9, we've got Marvel Project number 1 with 88,968 units, which I think is really strong. But I'll admit I'm a little surprised that didn't go a little bit higher than that. I thought that had the potential of possibly breaking 100,000. And it got a decent marketing push, but, you know, it seemed like a lot of people we've been talking to were fairly excited about that. I know I was looking forward to it. And certainly, like I said, this isn't a bad launch, but, you know, it seemed like it could have done better. Now, one thing I do find really telling about this month's top 300 list is the top 27 items, with the sole exception of the one at rank 13, all had multiple covers.
You know, we were talking a little bit ago about, I don't remember, a few days, maybe over the weekend or something, how it's rarer almost for a book to have only one cover lately than for a book to have multiple covers. It seems like almost everything has multiple covers.
Yeah, I mean, you can go down to rank 40, and the only other ones that don't have multiple covers is rank 13 was Batman. We got Detective Comics, Justice League, Dark X-Men Beginning, Justice League, Cry for Justice, and Archie. Everything else in the top 40 had multiple covers. And even within the top 40, we're already getting down to just a little above 51,000 units. So, I mean, maybe they're seeing a bump for the alternate covers. Maybe they're not, but I don't know. It just... It seems like it's getting a little played out, and I gotta wonder if sooner or later it's gonna backfire, and the sales advantage of those things is just gonna dry up overnight, effectively. Now, of course, the really big thing this month in terms of percentage jumps is at rank 35. And it's a comic we talked about on the Weekly Comic Spotlight with Archie 600. Now, it sold 54,113 units. Now, typically the Archie titles don't do all that great in the direct market. This one did phenomenal. It had, compared to issue 597, because 598.99 apparently did not make the top 300 list for those months, it had a 2,011% jump from 2,563 units to, again, that 54,113. So, highly successful within the direct market, at least. Who knows how the sales differed outside. Highly successful storyline stunt they did there. It's going to be very interesting if next month we'll even see the 601 issue on the list or not, or if it'll drop below again. But, I mean, to me, that's just a phenomenal bump up in sales. Certainly the highest I think we've ever seen, and probably ever will see.
Oh, certainly.
Now, another one that jumped up pretty well was at rank 26, and that's Fantastic Four 570 with a new creative team. It went from the previous issue doing 44,677 estimated units to this issue doing 62,335 estimated units, which is about a 17,658 unit jump, or about 39.5% jump. Which, for a new creative team, I mean, that's just a huge, huge jump. And really, the last couple of times we'd seen jumps like that would be for, you know, a magic number issue for a really high-profile creative team. Actually, normally it would be for a crossover tie-in to, like, a Civil War or, you know, Secret Invasion kind of thing.
Right.
Now, up at rank 18, another one that jumped pretty high with a 77.37% jump was Daredevil 500. Previous issue was at 41,386 units, jumped by over 32,000 to 73,408 units, which, you know, certainly anniversary issue, wrap up of a major storyline, extra double size issue, all those kinds of things kind of came together at once, and really kind of paid off for them. But, you know, as the item above it, Amazing Spider-Man 601 is going to show, after you go from a round number of 600 down to, you know, just a regular kind of issue, you know, that dropped by 36.46%, losing 42,571 units, taking it down to a still very healthy 74,200 estimated units. Now, it lost a little bit more with 602 and 603, but it's back, you know, even at 603, still, you know, just a little below 71,000 units. So I think they made the right decision taking the three Spider-Man titles and merging them into the one. You know, you've got a very consistent sales trend across those three issues a month, which they did not have before. And I think there's a lot to be said for that kind of predictability.
Right.
One title I don't think we've checked on too recently is Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8. It's up to issue 27, and it used to be fairly routinely, you know, within the top 10 or just below it. It's drifted down to rank 37 with 53,346 estimated units. Again, it's getting some attrition every issue, and that just, you know, takes its toll over time. I think it's continuing to be a good series. There's talk about doing a season 9, I believe. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that. I think they're doing good stuff here. I think if they do a season 9, they need to be a little tighter, more focused, less issues, and have Joss Whedon a lot more involved and get, you know, keep the name talent on it. I mean, they've had great writers, great artists, but, you know, for, it's supposed to be, what, a 40-issue run? You know, I think attention wanders after a while.
Yeah, I have not been keeping track of that one, frankly, but it's certainly more Joss Whedon can do nothing but help the thing.
That's my theory.
Yeah.
See, he created it, he knows how to write, he's a fan favorite. Where do we go wrong here?
You know, he's busy doing stuff that's putting more money in Joss Whedon's pocket, apparently. So that's
can't say that I blame him.
Yeah. Not a hard decision to make. You know, I mean, he did what he could. I mean, he comes in, he does the initial stuff, gets the initial buzz, and hopes that, you know, it's gonna carry along after that.
Well, and some of the people they've had writing it have been writers from the TV show. A matter of fact, this particular issue was written by James Espenson, who's one of the writers, either head writers or story editors, one of the people involved with the TV show at a deep level or whatever. Might have been one of the producers, I forget. Anyways, involved in the writing and involved in the TV show. So it's not like it's not authentic Buffy material here. But not quite the name recognition that Joss Whedon has either.
Right.
Let's see, jumping down a little, we'll check in on Wednesday Comics, issues 5, 6, 7, and 8. Number 5 came in at rank 53 with 38,616 units. It's down about 5.25%. Issue 6 dropped to 37,763 units, a drop of another 2.21%. Number 7 went down to 36,744 units, a 2.7% drop, taking us to issue 8, which is the last one in this set of numbers, which had 35,932 units, which is another 2.21% drop. So that kind of attrition, I think, is a little harsher than most of the other weekly comics have had. But I think this is also just a fundamentally different kind of a format for a weekly comic. So I'm not surprised by that kind of a drop-off. Now, down at ranks 71 and 72, I think we're going to start to get a feel for the potential sales power of Darkest Night. Now, as a reminder, we already talked about up at rank 23, Blackest Night Titans number 1, doing 64,698 units. At rank 71, we've got Titans 16 at 31,375 units. And at rank 72, we've got Teen Titans 74 at 30,348 estimated units. The combined total for those two titles does not equal that Blackest Night Titans sales figure.
That's, yeah, an interesting tidbit.
So, I mean, it's got the potential of doubling sales for titles. You know, I think that's a very real potential. Now, this issue of Titans is down like 32% from the previous issue, and I'm thinking that previous issue might have been a Blackest Night crossover. but I'm not sure off the top of my head. Let's see. Now here's one that's interesting. At rank 75, first issue of the new Doom Patrol series, 28,237 units. To me, this is really raising the question of how much of a demand was there for a Doom Patrol series. And regardless of quality, I don't know that the team has that kind of built-in audience that may be needed to launch a new title these days. Now, I'm also noticing a very interesting drop between two issues of Incredible Hercules, because we've got issue 67, or not, at rank 67, I should say, we have issue 132 with 32,645 units, and then down at rank 81, we've got issue 133 with 27,462 units, which is a drop of 15.88% or nearly 5,200 units, 5,183.
I think the applicable question there is, let me take a quick look here, is what went on between those two issues?
It went twice monthly, and 32, I think, featured Hercules, 33, Amadeus Cho.
And maybe that's like the big thing. Let's take a quick look here. 132 had, okay, that's an interesting one. I have a little editing here or else I'm going to seem like a rambling idiot at this part, but I'm just trying to look at the covers. Okay, so 132 had the first part of the Thor, you know, the Hercules as Thor, and it had the big Hercules and the Thor outfit on the cover, which is something that I think would intrigue people. Plus, that issue had the variant cover that had the big mighty Thor variant on it. Now, 133 has Amadeus Cho on the cover. The whole book is Amadeus Cho, and it had a variant cover also. And we pointed out that everything has variant covers. But maybe the difference is, and a lot of it has to do with shops ordering it, right? Not people buying it. You know, they see Hercules in a Thor costume and they're going to order more copies than one that's got Amadeus Cho running around with a bunch of flying pink brains, you know?
Well, I think we should keep an eye on this over the coming months, because as they bounce between the two features, essentially, who knows? Maybe we will see a trend where the Amadeus Cho issues just don't sell as well as the other ones. And it essentially has two parallel trends going on for alternating issues. You know, yep. At this point, I think the cover image of Hercules as Thor, you know, I mean, that's a cool concept, and I think in and of itself could account for some of it. And part of it is 132 did have a bump of 3,478 units. So I'd have to go look at what was in 131, that kind of a thing as well. So,
well, I seem to have it here. 131 has Thor. I mean, not Thor. It has, it's got Hercules on the cover. I mean, maybe that it's got Hercules and Amadeus Cho.
But it looks like actual story content could be influencing sales, and that's actually, I think, newsworthy.
Right.
It doesn't seem to happen all that much. I mean, events are one thing, but actual story within a regular series influencing its sales, we don't see that often. Sure, creative team change or big stunt or something like that, but
What will be also interesting is 134 and 135 both have kind of cheesecakey covers on them.
I certainly think that'll be interesting to look at, that's for sure.
Interestingly, 134 does not have a variant cover.
That's shocking. That must be a mistake. I'm sure they'll fix that.
Well, it's the first one. Well, 130 didn't have one, but 131, 132, 133, and then 135 all have variant covers. So, again, it is more the rule than the exception.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that came out in this month was the Red Circle stuff. And they started with Hangman, went to Inferno, then the Web, then the Shield. And the sales followed that exact trend, with Red Circle the Hangman doing 20,273 down at rank 106, followed by Inferno down at rank 111, with its first and only issue doing 19,600. The Web did 19,514, and the Shield did 19,068. So only about, 1,200 unit gap between the highest and lowest, 1,205 actually. Not that bad of a spread, but, you know, with, you know, an average of, you know, 20,000 units, certainly not making me think that they need two Red Circle titles ongoing.
Yeah.
We'll see how that pans out for them.
I don't think I'm sticking with either one past the first issue, so tell me all about it. Well, we'll find out when we do these episodes.
Yeah, I haven't read the Web yet. I'm curious about that. I thought the Shield was okay. Again, there's not a mandate for these.
It was not terrible, but it was not... It was not enough to get me to say, wow, I must buy that. You know what I mean?
Well, we're at the point where Marvel and DC are both putting out enough stuff that it's got to be more than not terrible to justify continuing, I think. But
yeah.
Then I see at rank a juxtaposition likes at rank 138 and 139, two books that I think could not be more different. You couldn't have a wider diversity here. One of these books is Astro City, The Dark Age, Book 3, Number 4. The other one is Marvel Divas, Number 2. They came in pretty much back-to-back ranks with a 22-issue difference between them. And out of that 22-issue difference, I'm going to say half of that potentially could just be the statistical estimate aspect. In other words, these could be a lot closer in sales than these numbers are indicating. Because again, we're talking estimated sales. The order index only goes to 2 decimal points. In this case, 1 index point equals, we'll say, 7 or 8 copies. So figure kind of a plus or minus 4 or whatever. So, actually, I guess only about, you know, you could trim off maybe 8 issues between those, which still gives it a difference of, you know, a dozen or two easily. On the upside, Astro City outsold Marvel Divas, but the fact that they were so close in sales, I find kind of, you know, disheartening. But not the least bit surprising, Marvel Divas number 2 here had a 32.19% drop from the first issue. That may seem a little harsher than normal, because it is. But this is also just such an oddball kind of a series that I'm not surprised it had that kind of a drop. I think we'll see the same thing on Models, Inc.
I'm responsible for one of those. On that series. I'm not directly, right? Because, you know, these guys order the things, but I certainly didn't stick around.
Down at rank 164 is Rebels number 7 with 1,670 copies. While I'm liking that series, the art preview they've had in recent comics for the annual I was not impressed with. And I gotta wonder if they're having to cut some corners on the cost of the art, get cheaper artists or whatever, just because of the way this series is selling.
Mm-hmm.
At rank 193, and I do not mean to be picking on DC, but these are the ones that are jumping out at me. We got Vigilante number 9, 8,378 units, and this is no doubt a lot of why it's been canceled as of issue 12. Now, to put that in comparison or in context, a few items below it with 7,957 units, so only about 400 units less, is reorder activity for Blackest Night number 1. Going a little bit further, we've got at rank 198, we got the second issue of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, That's the comic book adaptation, is not quite the right word, realization, I think we'll say, of that Philip K. Dick storyline. It is doing 7,668 units. That's down 31.28% from the first issue. I've got to think that while this may drop a little bit more, I think it'll quickly stabilize, and that once people kind of realize what it is and if it's for them or not, they'll either stick with it or not. But I wouldn't expect this to keep falling down, you know, issue after issue after issue.
Any of these are bound to stabilize, one would imagine, at a certain point.
One would hope, but that doesn't seem to be the case when you see all these red numbers indicating they're still dropping.
Yeah. Well, I think part of that has got to do with the fact that they will often get aborted by the publisher before they would reach a stabilization point. So maybe that's what that's suggesting, is the stabilization point is lower than what is an acceptable level of sales to the publisher.
Well, let's ponder that acceptable level of sales question, because I think it's a very valid one. Because if it's not worth their money, they're not going to continue with it. So when you've got a title like Red Herring, which started at rank 231 from DC's Wildstorm imprint, doing under 6,000 copies with 5,976 units for the first issue out of, I believe it's a six-issue miniseries. One of six is what they're currently saying. I'm sure that by the next new solicitation we see, maybe not in the one in the previews that's just coming out, but the one after, it may be a three of three. Starting out at under 6,000 units, you got to figure it's going to lose some sales, and from there just plummet. In terms of, it cannot be viable for them to publish at that level.
Right.
And we're at the point where we stop seeing Marvel and DC books because it's just not cost effective for them for the most part. And we start seeing the smaller publishers that are able to work on a leaner and meaner kind of operating frame. Now we are,
and there's a lot of factors in that too, right? I mean, you've got a sliding scale on what's acceptable sales. I believe that what is acceptable sales for a Wildstorm or Vertigo book is a very different thing than what is going to be an acceptable level of sales for a mainstream book.
Well, certainly, and I also think even within any one kind of branch of a publisher or imprint or group of titles, whatever, what's considered acceptable is also dependent on who's on the book. It's acceptable to have a lower level of sales if you've got less expensive talent. If you've got a Brian Bendis, a George Perez, or a Ed Brubaker, and you know, just hot talent that you know you could be making decent money on a mainstream book with, if they're doing a lower selling title, it's the right decision business wise to pull them off that title and put them on something more, you know, bankable. I mean, again, for publishers, this is a business.
No, I agree with you on that. I think there's a lot of validity to that. It kind of, maybe it's just, we were talking about this previously also, is what is the incidence, really, of them kind of taking a shotgun approach to, let's try all these different things. And because we don't really know what the next lightning in a bottle kind of concept is going to be. So let's try a bunch of stuff. And some of it maybe is going to stick.
Well,
and the stuff that does, we'll do something with. And the other ones, it's like, well, okay, you know, we tried and it didn't really capture the,
the imagination or whatever.
The imagination, yeah, of the fans. So, well, we'll try something else.
Well, and I see kind of a wisdom in that approach of, if you don't know what's going to work, try a bunch of things, see what sticks. But it seems like when publishers are doing the shotgun approach, they're not casting the net as wide as they could. Look at Marvel right now with all these Dark Reign things where they're tossing a bunch of properties out, all of which are, you know, third or fourth rate villains or something. And you're not getting sufficiently different things coming out. I mean, there have been times in the past where Marvel would do a half dozen new books or whatever. One would be like a Man-Thing book. One would be like I'm trying to think what they would have done. Because they had a couple of times back in the late 90s, early 2000s or whatever, where it would just be, here's this wave of 9 books. Let's see if any of them catch on. And they were fairly different. A couple of superhero titles, maybe a sci-fi thing, maybe a horror supernatural, maybe a comedy thing, whatever. Those would all flounder after about 8 or 9 issues, then they do the next bunch, that kind of thing. But these days, we're getting half a dozen new Deadpool books. We've got a bazillion new Hulk characters, each of which I think has their own book or two. The targets they're aiming at seem fairly focused, even if they're doing a shotgun approach. And I think that's counterproductive. Whereas Wednesday Comics, arguably, is a fairly focused shotgun at the same time, with one title getting, 15 different properties out there. So conceivably, we'll see some stuff spinning out of Wednesday Comics, not necessarily out of those storylines, but maybe some of those properties get some new life breathed into them out of this, which I would say, if that happens, huge success for DC.
I agree with that.
Now, we reviewed G-Man Cape Crisis, and that's down at rank 294 with 3,101 units. Now, the list bottomed out at 2,906 units, which, fairly healthy sales for the bottom of the list. In some years past, it's gotten as low as 700, 600 units down here. Trying to skim through the bottom, see if there's anything else that's kind of interesting. We got Atomic Robo number 4, 4,237 units. Some reorder activity for Chew, Wednesday Comics, Green Lantern, Red Robin, Unknown, Dark X-Men Beginning, all 3 issues of Blackest Night Tales of the Core. They all did at least 4,400 units of reorder activity. I think that's pretty impressive. Scrolling back up the list, see if there's anything else that kind of jumps out. The Mighty, we've talked about a few times, ranked 227. It's selling 6,285 units. It lost a little over 5.5% or 370 units from the previous issue. That's one that I'm really enjoying, but I'm really afraid, every time I see a solicitation, it's going to have the last issue tag on it, which I think would be a real shame. I'm kind of thinking at this point it'll go to 12 and stop, just because that gives them 2 nice, trade paperback collections.
Right.
But
it'd be nice if they actually pull that together in some way that allows them to tell the complete story as, and have it wrap with some kind of semblance of closure.
Yeah.
For the
a satisfying ending of some sort, even if not what they had originally envisioned. Yeah, I hope they're able to do that. Now, 151 of the 300 items had a $2.99 cover price. It's a clear majority, if just barely. The $3.99 cover price was on 110 of the items, so that's still coming up pretty fast with well over a third. And the only other price tagged have more than a handful of items was the $3.50 price tag on 15 items and the $4.99 price tag on 7 items. So some of these books are a little bit expensive. The most expensive was, I think, $5.99 this month. The cheapest was $1.99.
Any other outliers down here? I usually like to look down at the bottom of the list and say that's a shame about something. It's not that many down here this time.
Well, I think that most of the ones we would do that with fell below this time.
Yeah, well, I will say Incarnate from Radical down here at 285, that's a pretty low number. I thought that was a pretty good book, and the fact that it's fallen down here, I hope they have some other distribution channel for that. Dynamo 5, it's always a never fun to see that one down at the bottom. Some of these are interesting when you look at like a Marvel book like Ripped War. That's from that Marvel, the European line or something like that.
The Soleil line maybe or whatever.
Yeah, is that what Ripped War is from? Or maybe it's a famous author's.
It's
I'm not even sure. Either a famous author's or
the other one. But I've got to imagine that they're doing okay with those either in trade in the mass market or something like that.
Yeah, or they got some other kind of mechanism to be getting that out. Or even, and I think this is what the case is on your Wildstorm books and your Vertigo books. I think that those tend to have a little longer life in trade. I think you could take something like Rift War as an example. And, you know, that could be more of a perennial seller on the bookshelf at a bookstore.
Well, I also think, though, with those imprints, both at Marvel and DC, with the famous authors, that kind of stuff, when you're within a smaller department, you know, that imprint or whatever, you've got less overhead there you've got to contribute to, whereas any mainstream Marvel or DC book is kind of rolling up into having to pay for the editors, the assistant editors, the production people, the assistant production people, the guy getting the coffee and the running the copy machine, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's really where some of these smaller publishers, like Boom, like IDW, like Dynamite, Image, IDW, not so much Image. Image is a special case. But where some of these other ones are really have the advantage over Marvel and DC is they're smaller, leaner, meaner fighting machines. You know, Unknown can do a little under 4,000 copies and be viable, which I think is a damn shame. It's a brilliant book. But it would be, you know, at a Marvel or DC, unlikely to follow on with another miniseries, whereas Boom's able to do that. Now, one could argue, well, it's because it's written by Mark Waid, he's in charge of Boom. It's like, I'm not going to say that wouldn't factor in, but I think Mark Waid's also a man enough to admit if something's not working to not continue with it. This, I think, is acceptable sales for Boom and worthy to do more with.
Right.
And I think they're smart to take a long-term vision on this. It's allowing them to grow their library of properties they own in addition to all the other stuff Boom's doing with the Disney properties, the Muppets, the sci-fi channel type properties. You know, they've got a fairly wide diversity, and adding original content, I think, is a necessary move and a smart one, particularly when it's by Mark Waid.
Yeah, well, I mean, and he's expanding that universe. They're soliciting for the December solicits a Incorruptible,
mm-hmm.
which is like flip side of a bad guy who, after the Plutonian goes berserk, you know, he's now become a good guy. So, I mean, we've got that, his Incorruptible and Irredeemable. We've got his Unknown going on. You know, these are kind of mainstays. And, you know, it's like, hey, to me, it's like you're going to hire Mark Waid. He's not, you know, he's no fool. You know, yeah. It's like he's a good writer and everyone, you know, not everyone, but I mean, a lot of people like his writing, you know, so you'd be foolish not to have him write some books. You know what I mean? It's like, and it makes sense.
Yeah. No, I agree with that entirely. Plus, I just like reading his stuff, so.
Yeah.
Even if they lose money on it, as long as they keep publishing, I'm okay. But I'm pretty sure they're not. I'm just surprised he has time to run Boom Studios, which he seems to be doing a really good job at.
Right.
Do his 15-minute podcast, which sure has only taken him 15, 20 minutes a week, whatever. But also write for Marvel, DC, and one or two other places, I think. I mean, he's cranking out a lot of really good stuff these days.
And, you know, we're glad to see it, right? I mean, this is, it's interesting because you get certain creators, they get a following and they can bring that following with them, you know, wherever they go. I'm a little surprised that fewer people than I would have maybe expected seem to have followed Mark Waid over. You know, and maybe it's just that they don't know about it. I mean, there is the large extent of if the book is not there on the rack, if it's not, you know, most people, let's not fool ourselves, not just our podcast, but any podcast, most people who read comics don't listen to podcasts. They don't, you know, they're not dialed into the community. I mean, they walk into the comic shop, they look at the racks, they look at what seems like it's interesting. They might ask the clerk for a recommendation, but, you know, as you have, been in many, many comic shops, and you're going to be getting a tremendously mixed bag on the kind of advice you would get, you know, asking that question at, you know, most comic shops kicking around. You know, some
yeah.
will give you good advice and some maybe not so good advice. So let's be frank. You know, it's like people are going to go in and they're going to pick books to buy based on almost a whim, you know, to some extent. That's a little harsh, and it's not completely accurate either. So, but I guess the point I'm really trying to get to is that if it's not on the rack for someone to look at, they're obviously not going to be getting it, right? So,
well, I mean, I completely agree with you on that and kind of where you're going with this. I guess the part I struggle with is I look at Irredeemable, brilliant book. I'm really loving that. I look at The Mighty, okay? Very different take on a not too different concept, but I'd say The Mighty's kind of more of a solo book, whereas the Irredeemable is almost more of a team book or whatever. But very good, but very similar yet different in many respects, okay? And The Mighty is selling, I think, actually I'm not seeing Irredeemable this month, but I mean looking at Unknown and other things, better than some Mark Waid books. Okay, again, looking at what we do have here of Unknown. Mighty is by, who is this by? It's by Peter J. Tomasi, Heath Champagne, Chris Samnee. I wouldn't say any of those are as big a name as Mark Waid, yet it's selling better than his stuff. You could say, well, maybe Boom's not in all these stores, but then you look above The Mighty and stuff, and you see other Boom titles, so at least retailers know about it. Granted, some of those other titles are like Farscape and licensed properties. So it comes down to, are people not following some creators to their, some popular creators when they're on a Spider-Man, a Batman, or Justice League, or Avenger type book? Are they not following them to their creator-owned stuff because they don't care about those creations? Because they don't know those books are out there? Or what? Because I do think there are a lot of people who follow creators from book to book, and I certainly recommend that. If you find somebody whose work you like, support them wherever you can. But then
right.
I see when they go to the smaller publishers, the sales shrink down accordingly. And it's like, why? I mean, are comic fans so brand sensitive that if it'd be the equivalent of saying, well, I only watch, you know, stuff on ABC. I don't watch that CBS channel. I mean, are you crazy? I mean,
there's an element of that, though. And, you know, there is a much stronger element to that than you might think. I think that in many cases, you know, you look at it and say, I read Marvel Comics. And, you know, you can get that when you have people in the Marvel versus DC thing. It's like, well, I don't read DC comics. I read all the different kinds of comics. But, you know, some people are very strongly delineate which universe they will or won't read. And, you know, to some extent, you've got something that's completely outside that realm, you know, all the way over in the land here of, you know, Boom. And it's like, okay, the store might order from Boom, and you make the point. Well, you see something from Boom that's a little higher up the row here. Well, okay, are they ordering that because it is a licensed property, and they're figuring, okay, I can sell this because it's a licensed property, and because I can count on people being familiar with Farscape,
right,
and
right.
coming. You know, to get that particular book, whereas, you know, Irredeemable or The Unknown or Unknown or, you know, whatnot, it's like, what the heck is that?
Well, I guess, I mean, and I agree that the Farscape thing's a bad example. Again, licensed property, it's got its own fan base, etc. But when I look at Unknown by Mark Waid, down at rank 272, you know, with under 4,000 units, and I look at rank 17 with Amazing Spider-Man by Mark Waid with 74,200 units. Now, granted, there's a world of difference between Spider-Man, which has had motion pictures, a theme park ride, cartoons, and has been around for decades, versus Unknown, where the title character isn't even, or the lead character isn't even the title character, literally, kind of thing. Or maybe it is, and is apropos Unknown. So I get there's a huge difference in the property there. But there's also, you know, about a 70,000 unit difference. And I cannot believe that Mark Waid's fan base is less than 4,000. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and again, you know, back to my point that I probably didn't make as clearly as I could have, how much of that is really due to the fact that folks are not even being exposed to the fact that there is this Mark Waid book?
I gotta wonder about that too, but I would certainly hope that most people who are doing, not most, but a sufficient number of people who are doing ordering at comic stores are aware of who Mark Waid is, that they may, I don't know, try to actually educate their customers or sell their customers on this concept, particularly ones who like his writing. I'm just saying that certainly there are a lot of people who aren't buying it, I agree, because they never see the book on the shelf. Don't see it, can't buy it. I get that. I concede that point entirely. But I go back to questioning, why is that? And, you know, is it because the retailers don't have faith in Mark Waid? They don't, you know, which, again, unknown property, who knows, it could have tanked, whatever. But every time I hear, well, people follow writers from book to book or artists from book to book, it's like, yeah, I believe that, I see that, but also there are other times where I see evidence that that's not happening. And
right.
I'm frustrated by that, I guess, is my point. Particularly when, you know, it's a really great book by a really great writer.
So. Sure. And it's Mark Waid, I mean, we're talking a lot Mark Waid, you know, it's the Mark Waid show.
He's evil. But, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. He's now, I forget what their new tagline is. It's no longer Mark Waid is evil. It's now Mark Waid is something else to go with the, and Mark Waid is incorruptible or something like that. But, you really get down to, he is a tremendously well-known writer. I would imagine, I mean, I know who he is. A lot of people, he wrote Kingdom Come. He's written a lot of very high-profile things. He's a, you know, for all intents and purposes, as far as I can tell, is a pretty darn good writer. He knows how to craft a story. He needs, you know, he puts together a very entertaining story. And people like his work when he's writing The Flash and when he's writing all these other kind of things. They talk about his runs with a certain amount of, I don't necessarily wouldn't go so far as to say reverence, but, you know, fondness and respect and all that kind of stuff, that they're good stories. But, again, he goes off and he's writing a story that's just as good as the stuff he did at Marvel with licensed characters, you know, or not licensed in that respect, but you know,
company owned, yeah,
you know, company owned characters. He's writing his own story, and people are like, I'm not that interested, you know. So it's interesting to me in one main respect, and that respect is that when you start thinking, do people follow characters or do they follow creators, right? And we've talked about this before. And, you know, you got people who are reading JSA, and the second Geoff Johns stops writing it, all these people bail. You know, it's not like they care about those characters who are in the JSA. It's like, oh, I was reading Geoff Johns, and they all flee, and the numbers drop. Not all of them. I'm using
I know what you mean, though.
You know, but same time, so they're obviously they care about the creator more than the character in that respect. But then, you know, Mark Waid goes from Marvel / DC to, you know, creator owned stuff at a smaller independent company, and they don't follow. So I'm mystified to some extent as to, you know, what the real...
Well, I think...
What the deal is with that.
I think it's less, do they follow creator or do they follow character, so much as, do they like the intersection of this creator on these characters? And right. When either varies, not so much. But going back to your other point you made a few minutes ago about, you know, Mark Waid doing this over at Boom and people not caring potentially, the question, I guess it comes down to, do they not care or are they unaware he's doing stuff at Boom? Given the podcast he's doing, he's I think reasonably high profile for an editor in chief, arguably right. More so than possibly Quesada, maybe not as much as Dan Didio, but certainly aside from Marvel and DC, out of all the others, he's higher profiler than any other editor in chief at any other publisher I can think of.
Right.
So I would hope it comes down to damned if you do, damned if you don't. If they're unaware he's doing stuff, I'm puzzled by that. If they're apathetic about him doing stuff, I'm disappointed in that. But, you know, again, I look at stuff at the top of the list. It's like, okay, I see why some of this is here. Some I agree, some I don't. This month, most of it, yeah, I do agree. I look at the bottom of the list. I'm like, damn, that's frustrating because a lot of it's really good stuff. But that's why I follow the sales stuff, is I find it interesting to know what's working, what's not, and why I follow it at the title and issue level, more at the title level, versus the is this month up or down and what does that mean for the industry, is based on what I see at the title levels. This is what's going to tell me what decisions publishers might make or why they might make certain decisions. You know, gee, crossovers are bumping up. Blackest Night Titans is selling more than Titans and Teen Titans. DC's probably going to try this again with some other event and this kind of a packaging because it works. You know, whereas if this month's up or down from last month, you're not going to see any decisions really made on that at the title level.
Right.
So, but ton of good comics, ton of interesting things. We should definitely keep an eye on that Hercules series. See if Amadeus Cho is the death touch for that, for sales on that book or not. And as the, seventh smartest man in the world, if he can do something about that. just saying. And one other thing, X Factor is still selling around 33,000 units at one point, about actually almost a year ago or whatever. Maybe not quite that long. Peter David was saying he was going to triple the sales. I am happy to report, because I think that started with issue 39. This is above the sales of 39. By a couple hundred units, we'll say maybe 300 units estimated. But that book actually had leveled off around the 31 to 32,000 level.
But that is in and of itself an interesting data point, right? Because left to its normal devices, when you look at how these sort of trends go, that book seems like it would have inevitably, you know, dropped down issue over issue. And you know, the fact that it's, you know, it's not like he tripled it, obviously.
I still
but, you
think
know,
he stands...
even sticking it, you know, it's you know, decent.
I still think he stands a good chance of maybe not tripling it, but doubling it. Before the year is out for the 12-issue point. Yeah, I only say that because I think it's reverting to the numbering and going to like 200 with a double, triple-sized issue, one of those 104-page issues. And if I did the math right, I think it would be 12 issues after that 39 thing. So maybe he was planning a year ahead and, you know, fooled us all.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it's possible that he could turn out to be right. And the final issue... the one that comes out in December, which again is in that previews that's coming out or just came out, it could double the sales from how 39 did, which, you know, would only probably last that one issue. But still, if that's the case, he deserves kudos for that.
And absolutely. I agree.
So, I think that pretty much does it for me. It's about all I got. You got anything else?
No, I think we've beat this one to death this month.
Cool. The The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify that you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the monthly question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.